Hello there. Back so soon? I had a feeling that you'd arrive tonight. And your timing couldn't be any better. I've got some bone-chilling stories. Just for you. From sociopathic lunacy to utter insanity. This time, it's all about the mind. And all of its twisted little caveats. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Have a seat, my friend. And let's begin. Children. Wonderful little creatures, aren't they? You'd be amazed with what they can craft on a whim. Imagination is a powerful tool. And in the hands of the youth, it can create hours and hours of entertainment. In the hands of an adult, however, it's a very different tale. Children's minds seldom think of jealousy, hatred, wrath, or even envy. But many of us adults do. Let those feelings run free inside that little head of yours. And they can turn your mind into a weapon.
Melissa. The name? Flighty. Slightly stupid. Conjuring up a 40-something woman who wears too much makeup. Who would never dare miss her weekly manicure. Who constantly gets trashed on sugary drinks with the girls. The kind of woman who, perhaps, you might see wearing a bump it 8 years after its infomercial debut. So, I thought it was kind of silly when my daughter named her imaginary friend Melissa. But I guess there's not much about imaginary friends that isn't silly. After all, when I was a little girl, I had a Barbie that I named Sandy. Which, I guess, was the early 80s version of the kind of Melissa woman I described above. Then again, Sandy's nickname was also Garage Sale Barbie, referring in no subtle way to her status in my hierarchy of toys. Anyway, my daughter, Anne Marie, would not stop talking about Melissa. She was clearly enthralled by her. At least I worked in an office during the day and only had to hear about it in the evening, whereas my husband, who stayed at home with Anne Marie when she wasn't at preschool, had to endure the Melissa talk all day. Still, we were both sick of it. It always consisted of high praise, and part of me wished I could entertain my daughter as well as her imaginary friend could.
Melissa and I went to the park today. She's so good at pushing me on the swings. Melissa has the prettiest brown hair. I like how it's all long and wavy. Melissa was telling me jokes all morning, and I was laughing so hard I fell on the floor. Melissa is so pretty, Mommy. I want to look just like her when I grow up.
One night at dinner, Anne Marie said,
I wish you could meet Melissa, Mommy. She's so nice.
I smiled and said, Well, I'd love to meet her. But Anne-Marie replied sadly,
No, I said I wish you could meet her, but you can't.
I thought sarcastically. Could that be because Melissa isn't actually a real person? But I just said, Why, honey?
Because she says it's not time yet,
Anne-Marie responded. Now, I've been using Reddit long enough to know that kids say cryptic shit all the time for no reason. So, I just chalked it up to general preschooler weirdness and left it at that. However, over the next few weeks, Anne Marie increased the amount of detail in the Melissa stories to an uncanny level. I had no idea where she was getting this stuff from. She told me that Melissa used to smoke Virginia Slims, but quit a few years ago. No one Anne Marie knows is or has ever been a smoker. She said that Melissa once got highlights in her hair, and the foils were left on for too long, and the bleach ruined her hair. The kid's never been to a salon outside of carnival cuts. She also said that Melissa's grandmother had died of an abdominal aortic aneurysm. Okay. I tried to push aside my astonishment and told myself that she was either picking up this crap from the kids at preschool, or she just managed to piece together strange bits of information she gathered throughout her 4 years and turn them into various anecdotes about Melissa's life. Still, It was unsettling to hear my daughter talk about adult things like carcinogens, death, and ombre hair color. Things got stranger when Clayton, our golden retriever, started reacting to Melissa's name.
"Daddy took me and Melissa to the dog park today,"
Anne Marie exclaimed.
"Clayton got to meet Melissa. He loved her."
At the mention of Melissa's name, Clayton jumped up from his usual position of being sprawled out by the fireplace and started looking around wildly. He apparently didn't find what he was looking for, so he began searching the rest of the house, running from room to room with his nose held high. Anne Marie shrieked with laughter.
"Clayton's looking for Melissa! He really likes her, doesn't he, Daddy?"
Anne Marie turned to my husband, Jamie, and grinned. Jamie returned her smile. "Yes, he certainly does," he said. I tried to catch his gaze so we could share a simultaneous eye roll at our daughter's new obsession, but froze when his eyes met mine. They held a look I had never seen before. Absent of joy, of camaraderie, of the sense of being in league together. Even absent of the simple comfort of sharing this cool October evening with his wife and daughter. There was in his eyes a sort of distance, a newfound unfamiliarity, a preoccupation, a deliberate step back. There was a hardness, an objectivity, as though he was seeing me for the first time as a 41-year-old premenopausal stranger with lines around her mouth and a spare tire around her waist and a grating voice that endlessly nagged, instead of the beautiful 20-year-old I was when we met. And I might have been imagining it, but I could have sworn I saw something else in his eyes too. Guilt. That night in bed, before I turned off the lights, I rolled over on my side to face Jamie. He was absorbed in his phone, the bluish glow illuminating his face. H had been Jamie's friend. I could see that now more than ever. At 45, his silver hair and Roman nose lent an undeniable sophistication to his sloping features, and the 3 or 4 wrinkles around his eyes produced the appearance of a man constantly deep in thought. Without thinking, I pulled up the blanket to cover my freckled, deflated cleavage, which was threatening to pour out of my tank top. Suddenly, I hear a ping from Jamie's phone. Facebook Messenger. Since when did Jamie use Facebook Messenger? "Who's that, honey?" I asked, the overt casualness in my voice betraying my pounding heart. "Oh, a mom from Anne Marie's preschool Facebook group for the parents," Jamie said. "This week's discussion was brainstorming ideas for projects that will increase the kids' STEM skills. Melissa had some ideas she wanted to bounce off me before posting them on the board." "Oh, gotcha," I said. "It's funny that her name is Melissa, too. It seems like that name has been popping up everywhere lately."
"Yeah, it's definitely odd," Jamie murmured, thumbs flying over his screen as he composed a response to Melissa. I fell asleep shortly after that, the Ambien dutifully fulfilling its responsibilities. My dreams were thick and warm. In the hazy orange light, I watched the sweat languorously trickle down Jamie's back as he thrust into Melissa with an urgency I had never before seen in his lovemaking. He couldn't get enough of her. Every withdrawal was filled with resentment and banished from another ecstatic leap forward. His hands grasped her heavy breasts, her deep red areolas heaving with pleasure. Sweat soaked her long brown hair and twisted it in ropes about her face. He lapped her up like a dog dying of dehydration. She was all he'd ever wanted. I awoke shaking. Jamie Lee turned the other way, snoring lightly. I threw my feet over the side of the bed to get up for a glass of water. But when I stood, my knees buckled and I crashed to the ground. Electrical pain seared through my back when I tried to sit up. I let my head rest on the carpet and closed my eyes. Sweat-matted hair and voluptuous breasts swam before my eyelids. What have I done to myself? I thought helplessly. A working old hag with nothing to show for her life, but a daughter who wants a different mom, and a husband who wants to fuck, or is fucking, a woman named Melissa. Laying on that grubby carpet with my spine sending flares of pain throughout my body, I suddenly realized the truth. Melissa was no imaginary friend. She was Jamie's girlfriend, and she regularly spent time with Jamie and Anne Marie during the day, Anne-Marie's endless chatter about Melissa was the perfect alibi for Jamie. It reduced Melissa to the role of a ghost, someone who only existed in Anne-Marie's mind. The black knife of infidelity cuts deeply, maybe even down to your very soul. There it disperses its horror-like ink and stains every crevice of your mind. Try as you might, you can never scrub out the stains. Attempting to do so will only make them spread. So it began my vigilance. Over the next weeks, I listened to Anne-Marie's chatter about Melissa, observed all the errands Jamie insisted on doing, watched his eyes flicker with a shy happiness when he thought I wasn't looking. I had to prepare myself for what I was about to do. It was a Monday, and Anne-Marie was in preschool for half the day. I told my boss I was sick and had to go home. The house was quiet when I entered. I went into the kitchen to get a drink, to steady myself for what I might find. That's when she walked in. Butt naked, giant breasts protruding obscenely, rivulets of chestnut hair tumbling over her shoulder and down her back. Her stomach flatter than mine had been at the age of 5, her navel long and deep. When she saw me, she said, Let me explain. But the knife was already sliding across her throat, releasing a red waterfall that poured generously over her skin. She collapsed in a heap and I smiled, remembering how I had collapsed over my portentous dream about her and my husband. I knelt down and filleted her large areolas from her body and tossed them into the garbage disposal, laughing at the way her flesh sounded against the blades. I turned on the faucet and watched the mess bubble up in the sink. "I guess you shouldn't have been fucking my husband," I said to the corpse on the ground, while still staring at the sink. I turned around to face the dead whore. She wasn't there! Instead, lying there on the kitchen floor was Jamie. The wound on his throat gleamed, and his nipples were gone. His eyes bulged sightless. This time, I didn't see any emotion in them at all. Vertigo threatened to overtake me, and I grabbed the counter to stop the world from spinning. "What the?" I said, and was interrupted by a voice. It was inside my head, but it didn't come from inside my head. There was never another woman. "Of course there was," I whispered, feeling sick. "I saw her. I killed her." "No," the voice said calmly. "You killed him. There was no her." "But who was Melissa?" I asked. "I am Melissa. I am Melissa. I don't understand." "Go into your office." I stepped over the corpse and walked into my home office, where I kept all my books and documents. "Look under the rug. Tap the floor with your hand until you find a loose floorboard. Under the floorboard, you will find the answers you seek." I lifted the heavy rug, blood from my hands interrupting its fluorescent whiteness, and felt around for the loose floorboard. Under the floorboard was a black zippered bag. The last thing I remember is looking inside that bag, and then everything went black. The police ultimately accepted my claim that I killed Jamie in self-defense. It wasn't a hard case to make, considering the contents of that black bag. My dear husband may not have been carrying on an affair with some woman named Melissa, but he was certainly planning to murder me and Anne-Marie. His journal outlined how, throughout his entire life, he had fantasized about torturing and murdering people. The more his victims had previously trusted him, the better. No trust was stronger, he figured, than that of a wife and a daughter. He could barely contain his excitement for the day the event, which is the term he used in his journal to refer to my and Anne-Marie's torture and murder. The event was planned for 3 weeks after the day I killed him. Anne-Marie hasn't yet found out many details, just that Daddy was a bad man and that we were safe now. I figured the less she knows now, the better. Recently, however, she did say something that unnerved me to my very marrow.
"Mommy, Melissa told me to tell you she's proud of you, and that she did what she did to protect us from Daddy. And she wanted to tell me she thinks you're beautiful."
Trembling, I said to Anne-Marie, "Tell Melissa I said thank you, and that she really does have beautiful hair."
Hmm. I'm afraid this next story is not so frightening. I'm sorry. Did you fall for it? Oh, what's with the frown? You don't like to be lied to, huh? We learn about lies from such an early age, and grow accustomed to them being thrown around so casually. Maybe that's part of the reason why people never grasp the true horror hidden within them.
The dog ran away today. It's an easy lie, a simple one, believable. No one questions it. Everyone knows how dogs are. There's some work to follow through on it, of course. Walking around the neighborhood, yelling, whistling, putting up posters, fielding calls from people who claim to have seen the dog, which they haven't, obviously. But I have to play along for the kids. It's sad to watch the hope flare and fade in their faces, but what's the alternative? The truth wouldn't make them any happier. The dog ran away. I'm cleaning the tools in the shed. Barely even a lie, really. Omission, if anything. The shovel did need to be cleaned, and a dent hammered out of the corner where it struck a rock. And obviously the axe had to be sharpened, so why not give the other tools a once-over while I'm out there? It's window dressing, but that's important. Setting the stage appropriately stops people from asking questions, and that saves all sorts of trouble down the line. The less you say, the less you have to remember. The stupid dog ran away. I was out cleaning the tools in the shed. Your mother and I aren't fighting. How can children understand adult relationships? Tension doesn't mean two people don't love each other. If anything, it means they love each other too intensely. It's easy to shrug and walk away from someone you don't care about. Much harder to see someone you love going down the wrong path. I am anything but distant, no matter her accusations. I am deeply involved in this family. I sacrifice to protect it. My honor, myself, I will give it all. We'll talk about getting another dog. The lock in the shed is to keep you safely away from dangerous tools. Your mother and I aren't fighting, but she's gone to stay with your grandmother for a little while. Why do things get so complicated? Here, at least, is one designed to reduce questions. Everyone knows what staying with her mother is code for. Not the children, of course, but they still think that the dog ran away. Everyone else just sees me putting on a brave face. I think they respect me for raising the kids without her. I didn't want this. Everything I've done has been to protect this family, to keep it together. I don't know why she couldn't see that. I never wanted to be in this position. At least it's winter and the shed won't start to smell for a little while. She's taken the kids. Condensing. All other lies fold into this one. There's no one left to care about the dog. No one to ask about the tools. No one asks for details on this. It invariably gets a grimace and an awkward apology. Meanwhile, I can take a deep breath for the first time since the dog ran away. Funny how easily that line comes now. Even when I don't need to say it, it's just what comes to mind. My time is my own again. Time to watch TV. Time to work in the yard. Time to dig holes without anyone asking why, or what for, or why don't you pay attention to us. I pay so much attention. Everything is about you, even this, even now. Isn't family supposed to be about happiness and togetherness? We're happier now, and we'll always be together. She really was going to leave, you know, tear this family apart. I couldn't have that. I kept us together. She got full custody. That's the dog's grave. Omission again. It is the dog's grave. If you dig down, you'll find the dog. I don't know what kind of sick-minded person would dig into a dog's grave, but you can never be too careful these days. People ask a lot of questions, stick their noses into other people's business. So if you dig down, you'll find a dog, and you'll be ashamed of yourself and cover it back up. Which means that you won't dig a few more feet down to see what else might be there. I'm not ashamed. I'm just not stupid. The world runs on polite fictions. These are the lies we tell.
Daydreams are quite strange. It almost feels like you get literally plucked out of your own mind and into the reality of another. Not many are aware, though, that some things can go awry in these states of the mind. A little boy at the Tokyo subway station had to learn this lesson in a most unforgettable and quite unique way.
This story is a retelling of something that happened to me when I was 7 years old. As the years have gone by and I've grown up, I've realized that the story cannot possibly be true. Yet, I can't shake the feeling that it is. It happened in Tokyo, in the subway station. I was standing with my father when I saw the demon, a monstrously tall and furry creature with leathery black wings and a snout like an anteater. I must have stared at him for close to 10 minutes before he finally spoke, in a soft mutter that was clearly intended for his ears only.
"This human is creeping me out," he said. "It almost looks like it's looking right at me."
"I am looking right at you," I said. The demon nearly jumped out of his skin.
"You can see me?"
he asked. "Yes. Can't everybody?"
"Not unless they're in the fifth dimension."
"Am I in the fifth dimension?" I asked.
"Your mind must have slipped over here by mistake. What were you thinking about before you saw me?"
I thought for a moment and then grinned. "Trains."
"Oh, well. Trains are the link between our dimensions. I guess your mind must have just wandered over here. Either that or you're going crazy."
"I hope I'm not going crazy," I said.
"Being crazy is a good thing in the fifth dimension," the demon replied.
I laughed. "Do you have subway lines in the fifth dimension?" I asked.
"Of course," he said. "How else would we get to work?"
"You've got wings," I said.
"Yes, but who wants to fly? Taking the train is so much faster. And if I fly to work, I'm all sweaty when I get there."
"So what do you use your wings for?" I asked.
"I put them over my head when it rains."
"Can I see?" I asked.
"Sure," the demon said.
My hair blew back as he swooped his enormous wings over his head. I laughed again. "You're funny," I said. The demon laughed too, but then his expression changed. "Are you okay?" I asked. "You seem sad."
Yes,
the demon replied, not looking at me, but at something behind me.
"Say, would you like to see a magic trick?"
"Okay." The demon reached up and tugged a big rainbow handkerchief out of his snout. He must have pulled out 20 feet before he ran out. "That's funny," I laughed, but I stopped when I realized I wasn't holding my dad's hand anymore. I looked around and saw the subway station had disappeared, replaced by flowing green meadows that were full of old trains.
"I can't see the subway station anymore," I said.
"That's okay," said the demon. Sometimes it is better to see what isn't there instead of what is.
What do you mean?
Sometimes, when I'm bored or sad, my mind slips off to the third dimension, and I see people like you.
That's funny, I laughed. Can you go to other dimensions too? But the demon didn't answer. He was looking up at the sky.
It's starting to rain, he said,
whooshing his wings up over his head. Warm droplets of rain hit my face. Can I get under your wings with you? I asked.
Not now, he replied. You've got to go home.
The world began to shimmer and flow together like different shades of green and golden paint, spinning around faster and faster in circles. I started to feel a little sick, and I closed my eyes. The world stopped spinning, but warm droplets of water still fell on my face. I opened my eyes and saw my mom crying over me, but I didn't see my dad. Where's dad? I asked her. Did he bring me home? Yes, darling, she said, although she didn't look at me when she said it. He brought you home, and then he had to go away. Oh, I replied. When will he be back? I don't know, she said. My dad never did come back, and it was years before I found out the truth. He had killed himself that day. That morning, he had written a note to my mother, explaining that he intended to bring me along and step in front of the train with me. My mother found it when she got home from work and called the police, but it was too late to stop my father. The witnesses say that just before he jumped, I pulled away from his hand and ran off, fainting right after. But one of the witnesses, a little boy around my age, said that he saw something take my hand and lead me away from the speeding train. He said it was a monstrously tall and furry creature with leathery black wings and an anteater's snout.
You seem to have lost a bit of color on your cheeks. And you're gripping those armrests with quite some strength. Are you sure you're all right? Seems like we're having another blizzard tonight. If I were you, I'd get going. Unless, of course, you'd like to stay the night here. I see. You're just itching to get back to the safety of your own home, aren't you? Well, if you ever come across our humble establishment once again, make sure to stop by. We'll be waiting for you. Perhaps you'll be able to meet some of our new guests. I'm sure you'll find their tales fascinating. Be careful out there, and don't stray too far off the road. You might end up lost, and we don't want you to become part of our permanent guests. At least not yet. Till we meet again, my friend. And now it's announcement time. Before we see you leave, I'd like to take a moment and thank the people who provided their voices to read these horror tales, along with everyone else who's been involved in bringing the horror to life here at the Cursed Inn. You can find more about our partners on our description page. And if you're a writer, and you think your story is sinister enough to be featured on our podcast, or if you'd like to volunteer as a voice actor, send us your demo at thecursedinn@gmail.com. We're always looking for new stories and talents to scare a guest. And please, don't forget to check out our pages on Facebook and Twitter for updates. We'll see you very, very soon.